The Hannity kicking gonna stop. It's gonna start now. It's gonna run through the summer, and it's hot, hot, hot in public, if you will.
Yeah. What's up, everybody? What's going on? Try to turn the microphone on. That might help so you can hear me talk. We all want to hear me talk, right? There we go. What's going on, you guys? Little technicalities this evening. Turning on microphones and scrolling down on the old open music. What's happening, you guys? What's going on? It's Monday night. It's 10 p.m. on the East Coast. It's 7 p.m. on the West Coast. And somewhere sandwiched in between this Oreo cookie of the United States time zones, it is 7 o'clock, it is 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, all in between, and you are live right now with Plum Love Foods Live. I am your host. My name is Chef Plum. I think by now you probably know that. Have you been checking this show out? I did sniff like that. That was a Donald Trump sniff, wasn't it? Is that what it was? I did a little one of them. Holy shit. Yeah, I gotta touch on that for a minute too before we get into this stuff, even though I know it's not like a political show, but we got to talk about it because it's just one of those things, man. You're checking out Plum Love Foods Live. Welcome. Thank you guys for your support and checking this show out and listening. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hey, you know what we're going to do? This is going to be the next couple episodes. We're going to do a little focus on beer, and I'm going to talk to our guest tonight, Church Owl Beer, Taylor from over there, small brewery. Then we're going to get a little medium-sized brewery we're talking to next week to the fine folks over at New Belgium. And to top it off, I've reached out to Budweiser, like Anheuser-Busch, the big beer people. And I want to kind of ask them the same line of questioning just to see how the answers differ from each different brewer. I think it'll be kind of cool to check out. It's going to be my trifecta / hat trick, or they call it turkey in bowling, right? It's a turkey of beer information into your ear. So I'll come up with some witty name. I don't know. But that's what we're going to do. I think it's going to be fun. I want to talk to them about food. I did a Donald Trump sniff twice. I wonder how big companies like Anheuser-Busch and, medium-sized companies like a New Belgium Brewing Company. And of course, tonight, our guest Taylor from Church Owl, how they think about food, if it comes into play at all. That sort of stuff. So it would kind of be the same line of questioning, but for each guest. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to doing it. And tonight is going to be a cool guest. Let me tell you what. I was at a festival not too long ago, and I met this person. And I'll tell you what, she turns out, I'll give her a better intro before we get into it, but she brews beer, and had I not known it was gluten-free, it tastes delicious. She's got such great flavor in it. It doesn't have that weird emptiness sometimes you get from sorghum. It's a really, really good beer. As a matter of fact, I'm going to get some and put it on tap here at the house. Not because I care about gluten-free for myself, but because it's a good beer. It really is just a freaking good beer. I kind of don't know if I should tell her I'm drinking Heineken Light right now, though. I'm afraid she might make fun of me for that. I hope not, but I got to be honest with her. But you know what it is? Because they changed the hops in it. It's really good beer. Anyway, all that aside, I'm looking forward to talking to Taylor tonight. What's going on with you guys? How was your weekend? How was your shift tonight? How was your shift this weekend? How many people work doubles, I'm sure. I had quite a long weekend myself. We did the catering this weekend on Saturday for some really, really, really great people. It's amazing what you get to do this job that I do, and you get to meet so many cool people. I tell you what, this past Saturday, no different. Met some amazing people. The gentleman does acoustic shows in his house, and just cool people. So happy to get to know them and have them in the old Rolodex. And who knows, maybe we become friends. I'm looking forward to it. That's what's cool about doing what I do, is that you get to meet people. It's one of those things, like I said before, there's so many different jobs when it comes to this culinary industry, to the hospitality industry. It's not always sitting behind a line slaving away. There's so many different things you can do. So, you know, it's cool to have the opportunity to meet cool people. So that's one of the things that I did. And then, of course, I have to talk a little bit about the trouncing my beloved Pittsburgh Steelers, which I'm sitting down here right now. I tell you what, my Go Steelers stoplight is not working. I've got to get it fixed. I think it's a conspiracy. I think the entire world decided to take that away from me. And I tell you what, even when you take that away, the Pittsburgh Steelers still win. I tell you what, we're going to get it back up as soon as we can. We're going to let practice this week dictate what's going to happen to it, and that'll kind of be our timeline to see when we can get the stoplight back. That's a Mike Tomlinism for all you Pittsburgh Steelers fans out there. But I'm sitting down here. I got a candle lit. I'm looking forward to talking to Taylor. But, you know, before we get into that, something that we've never really talked a whole lot about on the show. We've kind of mentioned it, but we've never talked a whole lot about it. And I know we all do it. I definitely do it. I'm pretty sure that everyone listening to the show does it. Shift beers. You know, like you get off, you get done working. I call it the old, I call it the victory dance. You kind of got to have it. I'm not sure. There's a lot of superstition behind it where I come from. The superstition that I've been brought up and I've maintained is that if you don't have your victory dance, your shift beer, you're going to screw up the entire thing for the next catering or the next event, the next gig, whatever it is you got going on. If you don't have the shift beer, it's going to mess up the entire thing. Now, what does that mean? It means I can't go just drink it by myself unless I work by myself. But if I'm working with someone, they have to come with me, have to be a part of it. Most of the guys who work with me and the girls, they all know that. If we're having a gig and we're working, we're going to have a beer afterwards because you have to. But I think it started for me with just working in the restaurant and working on a line and cooking and just, it just was one of those things that it was like that after work beer and a cigarette for me. And you'd sit at the bar and you'd have that after work beer and it was a great beer. It was a fantastic beer. It was so good that you had another one. I'm not sure if that led to, you know, or whether it does lead to things for some people, but for me, it never did. For me, it led to a lot of long nights, that's for sure. But, I think it's important. I think what it does is it brings in that camaraderie that we love in this business. It brings in something to look forward to after a long day. You know that when I get done with work, if I'm going to sit down, we're going to have a beer together. And we'll kind of reminisce because when you work in a kitchen, even in the restaurant business, even like as a server or a bartender, you know, most of the regular civilians, they don't quite understand what we go through as that, you know, when we work in this profession, they don't quite understand what that means. So it's tough to sit down and talk to someone who's not there with you and explain to them, no, I work a job where I work 12 hours a day and I don't get a break. And it's funny how those things work. So, you know, listen, I think it's important. I like the camaraderie. I do. And I especially like duck camaraderie when I have ducks in my comrades. That's what I like. But no, really, like when we do gigs, I think it's a bonding thing. I think it makes us better. I think it gets a little tricky when you work in a corporate environment. A lot of times they don't want you hanging out with your, they hate the word subordinates, but with the cooks, with the servers and all that stuff. But when you're young in this business, I think it's a bonding thing. So to me, the shift beer is one of the most important things that I think we have. If you haven't done that, if you're one of the 6 or 7 people in this entire business who doesn't do that, I highly recommend it. You know, I don't even think there's 6 or 7 people. If you're one of the 3 people in the business who don't do that, I think it's important to do it because the bonding that comes through with it, it shows when you're on a line working. It shows when you're doing a catering. It shows when you're working with another person, I believe. So I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of the old shift beer, or as I call it, the victory dance. Because if we don't have the victory dance, then God knows it's just gonna mess everything up in the long run. There's my Donald Trump sniff. Another one. Let's talk about that for 1 second. I don't want to get too into it because I'm not a politics guy at all. That's true. Our good friend and past show guest Mark Henry just said we could do it at a gay bar, which is completely possible. We can do that. We've done that together before. And we didn't do it. It was thankfully just he and I at the gay bar, which is, you know, makes me happy. Anyway, listen, I want to talk just really quick about, did you guys see the episode of House of Cards last night? House of Cards, everybody watched, 70 million people watched House of Cards last night. They're calling it the debate, but it was definitely House of Cards. What a fucking shit show. What a fucking shit show. It's just crazy. This whole thing, I mean, is this real life? Like, are people taking this whole thing that seriously? This is fucking crazy. It's honestly like watching, like, I feel like I'm watching my 9-year-old have a fight every time I watch one of these debates. And to me, listen, I am non-political. I do not take a stand. I don't do shit. I don't give a fuck. And I will go back to the old George Carlin bit where I can bitch and complain about it because I did not vote. That's why. But honestly, watching it is the most entertaining thing you've ever seen. Watching Trump hold a microphone, first of all, he go back and look, you're going to die. The way he holds that microphone is the most unmasculine way I've ever seen a man hold a microphone. It's like two fingers. He's barely pinching it. And I don't know. Yeah, exactly. The parents didn't step in. I agree with that. I don't know how the fuck you became a part of the show. I get like 14 messages, and for some reason I'm reading yours, Chef. I don't know why. I think because my phone lights up over there with yours. Because I haven't turned you off on Messenger. That must be what it is. Yeah, he's holding it. He holds it like, you know, when you were a kid and you get those little containers of bubbles and you'd reach in and pull the wand out and it had the bubbles. He holds the microphone like the bubble wand. It's all it is right there. And then Clinton, has anyone heard this yet? Has anyone seen, what's that show, Westworld, I think, where they have the robot people? Yeah, Westworld, right? I think it's Westworld on HBO or whatever. Dude, how do they tell the robots apart from the regular people? Because when the flies land on them, they don't flinch. They don't even get them off. They don't care. That's how you know it's a robot. And let me tell you what, watch the debate thing last night, whatever the fuck they call it, the House of Cards episode 27, and watch. Every time that fly lands on freaking Clinton, she doesn't even care. She doesn't even acknowledge it. Dude, oh my God. It's hysterical. Like, you can watch this stuff and you can almost take, if I told you to watch it, take three notes. All you can take is three notes. Write down three sentences. I'm telling you what, you would definitely write down what is going to be a sound bite the next day. It is absolutely hysterical. And I mean, look, it's. I'm just hoping that Cyberdyne becomes aware before the election and fucking Arnold shows up like Terminator and tries to save us all or whatever. Like Terminator 2 Arnold, not Terminator Arnold, because Terminator Arnold was fucking terrifying. Terminator 2 Arnold, lovable, love the guy, love to have him around. And I'd like to ride a motorcycle with him. It looked like it would be a lot of fun. Anyway, on tonight's show, we are talking to Church Owl Beer. I'm looking forward to talking to Taylor. She was really, really cool. It's great to see female brewers. And not only that, it's gluten-free beer. And I'm being honest, man. Like, I asked her to be on the show, and I didn't mean for it to be about the gluten-free thing, but her beer was just fantastic, and I'm such a big fan of it. So I'm looking forward to talking to her and finding out more about it. But I tell you what, today has been an insanely crazy, crazy long day. And thankfully, in my long days, to keep me going, I have to have a little bit of coffee. And when I have coffee, I enjoy Birds of a Feather Coffee. That's right. Birds of a Feather Coffee Company is a small batch craft coffee roaster out of Tampa, Florida. You guys have heard me talk in the past couple of weeks about these guys. These guys use the highest quality special. How many times did I just say guys in one paragraph? That was crazy. They use the highest quality specialty grade beans. You know what I like the most about it? They roast them in small batches. When you order from Birds of a Feather Coffee Company, you're getting small batch roasted coffee. They're not just sending you, the roast a giant batch and pull some aside and mail it out. And, you know, it's not that at all. It's small batch coffee. I want you to try the Morning Lark blend. Listen, the Morning Lark blend is bright. It's very bright, has a honeyed sweetness to it, and just a hint of citrus and spice. It's great on those fall mornings where it's a little bit chilly outside. Here in the Northeast, we're going to have our first frost tonight. It's going to be fantastic. You can even sign up for a monthly subscription so you don't run out of your favorite. That's right. Check them out at birdscoffeecompany.com. You can get them every month, every 3 months, whatever you need. But check them out, because if you like small batch roasted coffee, these are your guys. I'm telling you what, the Morning Lark blend, That's the way to go. Yeah. BirdsCoffeeCompany.com. All right, guys. Look, I don't know. See, that's the weird part. See, you do these live reads, and what's the transition? How do you transition out of that? I don't know. Check it out, guys. I'm going to play you a tune. I'm going to get my birds in a row, my owls in a row, and then we're going to come right back here on Plum Love Foods Live. We're going to talk to Taylor from Church Owl Beer. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Thank you. we can do for you.
Nigga one, guy. Word up. Look out for the cops, though.
Cash fool.
Word up. 2 for 5s over here, baby. Word up. 2 for 5s. Niggas got garbage down the way. Word up.
Cash fools everything around me. Cream it.
Yeah. Check this old fly shit out. Word up.
Cash fools everything around
joint.
Me. Cream
it.
The
here
money.
We, here we go.
Dollar,
check
dollar
this
bill,
shit. Yeah. On the crime side, the New York Times.
Yeah, coming back live right now. I'll tell you what, I've had a lot of gluten-free beer in my days. You know, I have a lot of people in my family who are gluten-free, and I've tried to find a beer for them that they could taste, and I'm not going to name any, but I tell you what, I was completely it's disheartening. I don't know why people even try. I was at this festival doing an episode of Edible on the Road. And Church Owl Beer was there. And so I went over, and there's this peppy, beautiful young girl who was an incredibly great talker, super nice, and just has that aura about her that makes you want to talk to her. And so I'm hanging out with her, and she's telling me a little bit of her story. She pours me a beer to taste, and I'm a little hesitant when I taste the beer. I drink it. I taste it. I put it down, and I got to be completely honest with you guys. I have never had a gluten-free beer that I liked. This is the only beer I drank at the entire festival. Taylor is killing it. She is the owner and the founder of Church Owl Beer, and she's here with us right now. Taylor, what's happening?
Hey, Chef. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I got Wu-Tang on in the background. I'm drinking a Heineken Light, and I just got on the phone with you to talk about beer, so I'm great.
I love talking shop. Let's do this.
So I met you at this festival, and it's no lie. I got asked a bunch of times today. That's great that you're going to have them on, but is the beer actually good? And I'm telling you guys, unequivocally, is that a word? And I'm not lying about it. I'm not putting it over. I'm not just saying it. She wouldn't be a guest on the show if I didn't like the beer. It's really, really good.
I really appreciate that. You know, the whole mission was to make a beer that tasted really good and was gluten-free is a cool side effect. I have celiac disease, so I understand it can be really hard to find a good gluten-free beer. And
for
the
sure.
Market's just so small right now. So we're trying to answer that market.
Well, I think you've done it. And I tell you what, I know you guys, you're just starting out, but what you've done is you've perfected what you've got out there right now. And at this festival we were at, I mean, I must have came back to you 15 times. Like, there's other beers there, and they're great. But I kept coming back over to yours because yours really was great. And the one you have out there, it's kind of like your fall beer. Is that right?
That's right. We call it kind of our take on a Saison, or we call it colloquially our autumnal Auburn Ale.
Wait, did you say autumnal?
Autumnal, yeah. How's that?
Autumnal, is that a word?
Word. Yeah, I heard it was. I try and shy away from calling our beers things that traditional beers are called because we're not working with traditional ingredients. So, you know, I like to say it's like a Saison. It's very spicy in the sense of like, we use a lot of fall spices. We use cardamom, pink peppercorns, cacao nibs, vanilla beans. But because we're not using barley, I don't want to call it a Saison because they tend to be pretty barley-driven beers. So
now you brew solely with sorghum, right?
Yeah, 100% sorghum. We usually use up to 90% sorghum. Our grain bills across our beers vary. But sorghum is definitely our main one. I find it easier to work with, personally.
Right.
And I think that'll change maybe over the next few years. But for now, that's what we use.
So what are the other options besides sorghum that you could do to brew a real beer?
So people have been using buckwheat. A lot of people use oatmeal in their blends, rice, corn. Some people are even using ingredients like chestnuts to try and approximate the flavor of like a good nutty roast.
Right.
But sorghum is the most neutral. It tends to be a little funky. It tastes a little bit like hops on its own. So the mission is to kind of tone it down. But I have found personally it's the most neutral.
Interesting. That's so crazy. Yeah. And then what I liked the most about your beer was you don't use anything with unicorns, right? Because it's so magically delicious. And I'm not trying to make a Lucky Charms commercial. It's the truth, though. Like, every time I have a sorghum-based beer, it has this almost lack of background. Does that make sense? Like, you get flavor in the front, and then it just kind of goes away. Like, where you have a beer, it kind of has that full flavor, that umami almost happening with it. Somehow you've managed to do that with your beer.
I appreciate that. As I was saying before, I really didn't appreciate how kind of lacking flavor these other gluten-free beers were. They were pretty good on the whole if you just wanted to sit down and have a beer. But if you were looking for a flavorful beer, they weren't really going to fit the bill. No unicorns. Sometimes we sprinkle some pixie dust, but
nice.
But nice. No, it's just a very carefully calibrated amount of spices. It took 2 years to develop the recipe. I started in my home kitchen doing it. I did it for a party and, you know, tried to push the flavor as much as possible.
So what got, I mean, were you just always like, I guess, I'm not sure. I guess it's almost like what came first, the chicken or the egg. Was it the celiac with you or was it beer first? Like, what came first? Like, were you a beer drinker before and then you found out you had celiac, or was it the other way around?
So I only became a beer drinker very late into college. I met my husband in college and he's German, from Germany. So he drank a lot of beer around me. And so I got pushed into a bunch of situations where I had to try new types of beer, and it did me good, kind of. I mean, it was killing me. I had no idea. I was diagnosed with celiac disease 4 years ago, and it was right in the middle of Oktoberfest. And so my husband was walking around with Märzen and Oktoberfest, and I was like, this is a joke. I can't have any of this. So I started brewing in my kitchen in a tiny hall closet in Manhattan, and it kind of took over my life. So
wait, did you get like one of those like 5 gallon bucket home brew kits? Is that how you started doing it?
Yes. How else do you start? I mean, seriously, this is the thing though. The craft beer industry in America is so driven by people who are first and foremost homebrewers. And I mean, you think about any kind of small startup craft breweries, and they really started in a kitchen. They started in a closet, in a basement, you know, in a garage. And I think that's really what's driving the industry right now. It's very interesting and it's making some cool beers. So, yeah.
I mean, you're seeing a lot of that kind of come out, man. I mean, a lot of these, just not even the gluten-free section, but just these micro brews that are coming out these days. I mean, there's tons of them. In Connecticut alone, we just have, I don't know, I can't remember if it's 40 or 90. It's a lot, man. I mean, we have a ton of just small breweries popping up everywhere, but for the most part, they're all making great product.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. I mean,
well, you don't really know that because you can't drink it, but.
Well, I don't know that, but I hear from you and from others,
right,
my husband included, that the craft beer industry is alive and well. And the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times have done articles on the craft beer industry recently and how it's just absolutely exploded. It's just very cool. And I think it really is driven by the desire to have different kinds of beers and experiment with beers, because forever we've just been drinking, you know, Bud Light. And that's it. So now that, you know, our big domestic beers are kind of past, and these big imports like Corona have passed, the industry is looking for like cool beers. I think that's what's happening.
Yeah.
So we're trying to be part of that trend anyway.
Well, I think you're starting to see a lot more bars that are opening up to that are kind of, instead of just having your typical, you know, Bud Light, you know, shit on tap, you know, now they're starting to put a bunch of taps in, and it's almost become, you know, where before, maybe getting a beer wasn't nearly as like cool as like, oh, I'll have a glass of wine. But now it's definitely going the direction of, you know, the craft beer scene has become a thing where, you know, people, it's almost, I don't know, I don't want to say like it's cool to have a beer, but like, you know, it's kind of looked upon the same as wine now. Like having a beer isn't, whereas maybe before, look, having a beer was looked down upon, you know, as opposed to having a glass of wine. Does that make sense? Am I making any sense there?
No, totally makes sense. I mean, now we have like beer dinners with pairings, with food. That's so cool. And I think you're right. I think it's kind of almost taking the place of the wine industry in some ways, where, you know, we're not just looking for a light beer at the end of the day. We're looking for something challenging and interesting and cool and small and supporting local business and all these things. We're so conscious now of where our beer comes from that now it's kind of like terroir with wine. We can source our beer. That's so cool. And it goes great with food.
I think it's really, really cool. And, you know, I like how you use the word terroir because you're absolutely right. But, you know, I was recently at a winery in Long Island, and you know, the wine, you know, the same grapes, even the Chardonnay grape or the Merlot or the Pinot, like it can grow in one place, but if it grows, you know, on the other side of the country, it's the same grape, but it tastes totally different because of the terroir. So the craft beers, you know, even though you're making a pale ale or like you said, a saison, very, very different than somebody else doing it.
Right. I think that's part of the advantage the craft beer industry has right now. We've kind of broken the mold of what traditional saison, pale ale, whatever, tastes like. And so we're free to experiment with style, which is cool because that never used to be. It was light beer, dark beer, whatever beer.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
And I think you still have those people who are the Bud Light, Budweiser guys, but I think you're starting to see way, way more of people who walk into a bar and, you know, even your beer, for instance, who would look at that. I'm willing to bet that obviously you have the market on gluten beer, on gluten-free beer, but like if you walk into a bar, you see that, you know, you see, you know, Church Owl beer, the tap handle, you look at that and you may just ask for one and not even realize you're drinking a gluten-free beer.
Well, that's part of the mission too. We wanted to make beer that beer drinkers, gluten containing beers, glutenated, as I call it.
Right.
Like it's evil, but it's not. Glutenated beers, those people will drink, even though it's gluten-free.
Right.
And who sit down and they have this beer and they're like, wow, this is good. I like this. This is different. And they don't care that it's gluten-free. And a happy side effect is how I like to think of it. It's nice.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to think about it. The happy side effect. That's not a bad way to look at it. I'm coming in from Facebook here. Mr. Chef Mark Henry says, one, fuck Bud Light. And two, he says, why do you think beer is more approachable than wine?
Oh, I think number one, the price point thing is a big difference. You can get an expensive beer, but you can really get an expensive wine. You can get wine that costs hundreds and hundreds of dollars by the glass. And also it has this valence, wine does, of being super pretentious. I mean, it's like what your mom and dad drink. Not that I think that way. I love my wine. But I think that for millennials, so people my age, 26, walking into a bar and ordering a glass of wine, that's intimidating because there's a lot of knowledge that goes into how to buy a wine, how to drink a wine. Beer, it's such a young industry, you kind of can take a chance. And it doesn't, I mean, so you hate it. So what? You get another one. It's not like you walk into a bar and you embarrass yourself by ordering the wrong glass of wine with your fish. You know, ooh, I ordered a red wine with my fish. Oops, faux pas.
Right.
Whereas if you order a beer, you can't get it wrong.
Well, I guess that's a good way to look at it too. I mean, no, I think that's a great way to look at it too. I mean, you can have red wine with fish. I'd say a Pinot, you know, probably Oregon, something a little bit less heavy. But, you know, I know that because I had a very extensive wine course in my culinary school. You know, not everybody knows stuff like that, but you're right. You're right. You're right. And, you know, someone could come to me and say, I'll have the Merlot with my, you know, poached sea bass. And I would just go, you asshole.
What are you talking about? Yeah, give me a Brunello with my fluke.
Sure. Why not? Right. I mean, I guess you probably could get it. I mean, you don't think though, if you're having like, that's a great way. So you're having, you know, something like that. You're having a nice piece of fish with someone orders a Miller Lite. They're saying that kind of kills it though.
Yeah, I think there are maybe some boundaries, but I think that part of the fun of pairing beer with food is that you can kind of get out of it what you want. So you want, you know, a stout, and you want, you know, a nice swordfish steak. I guess that could be okay.
Right.
I would be okay with that, you know.
There you go. I mean, that works too. That works too. So tell me a little bit more about, so, you know, you didn't come from the beer industry or working in the beer industry. What did you come from?
So I went to college for, you ready for a pretentious major? I studied fairy tales and folklore, medieval to present, with a concentration in Nordic Arthurian romance.
So wait, you had to help him get the ring to Mordor, right? That's what you were. That's what you did.
Yeah, yes. I was essentially Frodo.
Gotcha. But wait, that's a real thing. Hair. You can study that. You can study that in fucking school. That's a real thing.
Yeah. Yes. You can. If you try hard enough and you work hard enough, then yes, you can.
Jesus Christ, that's a real thing.
I originally, back in my younger years, I wanted to be a chef.
Okay.
And my parents said, well,
you definitely went to school for the wrong thing.
Definitely went to school for the wrong thing. Yeah. My parents told me I had to go to a 4-year liberal arts college. So I said, okay. And they said, after that, we'll pay for culinary school if that's still something you want to do. And right after college, I kind of found myself brewing beer. So it wasn't ever an option. I just kind of jumped ship from academia straight to beer, which is
Well, what kind of job do you get when you major in like jousting and sword fighting?
Literally nothing.
I mean,
unless
what
you
want to
be a server at medieval times. Well, you go into academia. Yes, medieval times. So, yeah, you get no job. I worked at a radio company for a bit, actually. I was a glorified executive assistant, and that was my day job, and my night job was brewing beer just for myself, but I considered it a job.
Can you say what radio company or no?
Oh, sure. I worked at Premier Radio Network, which is under the umbrella company of Clear Channel.
We
syndicated conservative talk radio like Sean Hannity.
Gotcha.
It was a lot of work, and it taught me a lot of things that actually are useful in running my own business, like organization, because I'm notoriously scattered, but it taught me to really manage my time very well, which is something that I think most brewers know you need to have under your belt. And any business owner too. But my mom was an entrepreneur. My dad was too. So I get it, honestly.
So you were home brewing. You started off home brewing, and then I guess you came up with this recipe and it was just phenomenal. And you said, well, I mean, how'd that go the next day? Was it everybody tasted it? Like, wow, this is really good. And then it becomes how do you go from being a home brewer to starting your company?
I think it's just a tremendous leap of faith. You have to have the right kind of compliment from the right kind of people at the right time. And you also have to have the resources, or at least the will to try and find the resources. So I was lucky enough to be able to jump ship. We sold our apartment in the city, and the little leftover money that we had, that was the seed money for the business. So it was just one big leap. Eyes closed. For the most part.
Now, is your husband totally behind this? Like, he's on board?
Yeah, my attorney husband is totally behind this. I think that if he could quit his day job and come brew with me, he would. he said when I started that, you know, we were going to just try and ride this wave as long as we could, and that he thought my beer was good as a German. So if he thinks it's good, then I can't be doing something too wrong. So,
right.
So, but he's totally behind it. He's cool. He helps me on the weekends pick up heavy things and put them down because, of course, it's only me. I'm the janitor.
Right.
I'm the accountant. I'm the brewer. So
Call the business owner.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what I've learned. I've learned that business owners wear a lot of hats.
For sure,
and,
for
yeah,
sure.
That's true, for sure.
Well, check it out. So you transition into doing this. You just got a building not too long ago, right? You got a building that you're working out of.
Yeah, so the building we're working out of is up in Stratford. It's really, really lovely. It's on the water. It's kind of private. It's next to the airport, so we have the planes whizzing overhead. Yeah. So it's loud, but it's private and nice. It looks like a giant barn. And we're working on getting our permit for a tap room right now. We're not zoned, but hopefully sometime in the near future. Yeah.
Well, Stratford's a good place for that, and they support that too. I mean, one of the cool things I've noticed with, you know, working with as many breweries locally as I have is that it's a really, really cool community, and they all support each other very much. You know, I think if you got the support of, you know, Two Roads is in that area too, I'm sure they would totally support you.
Yeah, the thing about brewers is that they all kind of pay it forward, because everybody started as a small brewer, or you started as a small, like a single brewer at a big company. So everybody is in this together. It's not really dog eat dog per se until you get into like the really big fish. So everybody's really supportive. And Stratford is a town that is super cool with breweries. It's really great. Those guys are my buds. I've been in that zoning office so many times asking questions. Yeah, no, this is a great community. Stratford's very cool. People don't even
know. So what's next? Like, what's the next beer you're going to work on? Because, I mean, you've got the one you're killing it with right now. I'm sure you have more of that ready to go, right? Like, that's ready to be kegged, I'm sure. I'm guessing.
Yeah, we have some kegs of this beer. So the next one we are working towards is our stout. It's an apple pie stout. About 20% of the grain bill is oatmeal. I think it's delicious. And it's just a matter of finding all of the resources I need to caramelize my sorghum syrup to the right color for our malt, per se. So that's down the pipe. Also, we're going to have up to 7 distinct types of beer. So everything from pale ales to lagers to stouts to saisons. We're going to try and run the gamut, because that's really what's missing in the gluten-free industry, is a beer company that does all of it, not just pale ale. Not just amber. So
we gotta do a red ale. I love red ales. Do me a red ale. Can you Chef Plum's red ale? Can you do that for me?
Chef, yes, I'll name it after you.
Yeah, that would be incredible.
Like the plum line or something.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. So let's talk a little bit about the actual process of you and how you make the beer that you're making now. Because you're getting into some restaurants, you're kind of making that next step, which is awesome. But what's the process? Yeah. Like, how do you start?
So we work with something called sorghum LME, which is a syrup. It is in my opinion, the best way to work with gluten-free beer. It's just easier. It's optimized properly. And because I don't have my own grain mill yet, I'm not going to grist my own grain for the foreseeable future. But so it's very simple. Basically, we just use a kettle. A lot of people look at that and they say, well, isn't that like super simple? I try and keep it simple, stupid.
Of course.
Honestly, because there's so much that I have to control for in gluten-free beer that most brewers, or at least what I would assume most brewers, don't even think about. Like, why is this sorghum so funky? This is such a weird product. I mean, you can go buy it, take a spoonful of it and eat it, and you can tell me what you think. Working with it is kind of a pain sometimes. So we try and keep it very simple. And then I weigh out all these spices. You should see my desk at the brewery on brew day. It's like somebody upended a spice store. It's crazy and it smells amazing. Yeah, you know.
Wow.
What's that spice store in Westport? Penzies? It's like that in my brewery.
Oh, wow.
It's cool. The brewing takes hours and hours. We have a tiny little system called a Brewix.
Okay.
We're 1,500 liters only. And we do that four times a month. So that's around 26 barrels.
1,500 liters. Let's see. How much is that? That is, I'm doing math in my head right now. So what is that? That's like gallons wise.
Oh, man. 1,500 liters to gallons. Can we call Google?
Yeah, hold on. Let me just.
1,500. Wait. I have it. No, I don't.
I just shot both of our brains. There we go.
396.2581 U.S. gallons. So
wow. Okay.
That's a lot of beer. So it's about a 10 barrel system, plus or minus.
Well, that's pretty cool, though. So when you do that, you're gonna get you'll do that, and then you'll put it all in the kegs, or do you do like any kind of growlers or anything?
So we're only in kegs right now. It's more cost effective for us, but in the new year, fingers crossed, I'm working on getting canning going.
Wow.
That's my goal. Yeah. I'm so excited about it because I feel like that's the best way to tap into this market. I know it's hard for restaurants to take on a keg of beer because they have to move the product through their lines, but a lot of them will take on, you know, a 12-pack of cans. So that's my mission.
Wow.
That's what I'm doing right now, day to day. Yeah.
You know, that's kind of it. I got two questions about that. Because number one, when I think about a restaurant, you know, I was just thinking about how easy, you know, not how easy, but you get a keg, you put it on tap. And I guess it's probably not that simple. If you got a gluten-free beer, they have to clean the lines and everything before they put it on.
Yeah, so they can do one of two things. They can either clean a line for us with their CIP system, or they can put us on a cider line. So,
okay.
Because cider is naturally gluten-free, provided that they're not using any kind of specialty grain in their mash, which usually they don't. So, but it can be kind of prohibitive in that way. But we're the first gluten-free beer on tap outside of brewery. As far as I know, I haven't been contacted by anyone saying, you're wrong, we were. So, I feel like that's a coveted title. So,
That's
but,
great.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to be in kegs first and foremost. That was
now,
a goal.
Can you co-pack the canning or bottling? Can that happen somewhere else?
So I have a canning company in mind, Mobile Canning. The thing is, you have to be very careful about cross-contamination. So you have to find a company that's willing to really sit down with you and talk about, you know, how they clean their system and, you know, what kind of cleaning solutions they're using, how often they're cleaning, how many runs a day they're doing, things like that. So you can, you just have to be extremely meticulous about who you use and how often.
It's got to be expensive, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's expensive. Getting your own canning line, getting your own bottling line, not the easiest. But if you can work with a good canning company or bottling company, it makes your life easier. So that is on the radar for us anyway.
But you know, we live in a world now where people will spend 10, 12 bucks for a six pack of beer and not think twice about it, you know?
Isn't that amazing? I remember
it's crazy
in college thinking like, man, 10 bucks for a six pack, forget it. I'll just get whatever. I'll get Bud Light. And that's really changed. People are willing to pay a little bit more money on the front end to have a more enjoyable experience on the back end. That's a very unique feature of the beer culture right now. It's really cool.
It's true. It's very true because I don't even think twice about it. Yeah, I mean, to get a good six pack, I'll spend 10 bucks. I don't think of twice about it.
Well, it's interesting because that means that breweries can be freer with their use of ingredients. So like, whereas it used to be prohibitively expensive to use Madagascar vanilla beans, for example, or seeds of paradise or whatever. Now brewers can use these things with almost impunity. I mean, you think about these large format bottles at Whole Foods of all places, and they're like 30 bucks. It's crazy.
Right.
I mean, that's like a bottle of wine. So this is getting back to that other question about like, the difference between the wine and the beer industry. I think it's really narrowing because you have people willing to pay $30 for a bottle of beer versus a bottle of wine and not even think about it. Not even think about it. It's so cool. Wow.
So what do you charge a restaurant now for a keg? I'm just curious, like, you know, how you stack up to other companies and they buy kegs and whatnot. Like, what do you charge for it?
So I think personally, we're pretty reasonable for gluten-free beer. We're $180 for a half barrel keg.
That's not bad.
I was speaking to some bars and they were like, really? That, you know, we were kind of expecting like 230. It's like, wow, really? Yeah. I could have gotten away with it. But,
that you're undercharging? Any thought that maybe you're undercharging?
I don't think we're undercharging. I think we're charging to the craft beer market as a whole. I don't want to pigeonhole myself as like that expensive gluten-free beer.
Right.
I want to kind of fit squarely in the upper middle of the craft beer pack. And I think we're doing that from all of the research I've done and from all of the talking I've done to bars. I mean, it's more expensive than, you know, a regular...
Than a Miller Lite or something. Beer. But it's probably on par with, these guys have a good craft beer coming in, like a New Belgium. They got Fat Tire Ale or something like that coming in. That's about what it costs, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I would say within $50 anyway. And then you think about, like, what is your or the bar's margin of profit? So if they charge $8 per pint of beer, which is, you know, kind of the going rate now for a craft beer at a bar, they're still making 25% cost. That's pretty incredible.
I definitely think 180 is cheap. I definitely think 180 is cheap. I think that's very, very cheap.
I just think it's interesting because you don't think of beer as like super profitable, but it is. It is at the right price. It's just I love all this market research stuff. It's one of the more fun parts for me. Pricing my beer. Yeah. I know that's kind of like nerdy to say, but pricing my beer.
Well, no, in my business, it's food costs. It's really, really important to hit the right food costs for what you want to do. And I can imagine it's very, very similar to what you do. So you got the stout working. Any thoughts on doing a cider of some sort? We have so many great local apple orchards here.
Oh, I would love to. So Connecticut has this cidery rule. I think you can get around it somehow. I haven't figured it out yet, but you have to own an acre of apples somewhere in the state in order to have a cidery. I know you can go up and look at it at the Department of Revenue Services of Connecticut. In order to apply for a permit to have cider production, you have to own an acre of apples in Connecticut. Isn't that crazy?
All right. Well, when you're ready, I have 4 acres of land here, and definitely there's at least an acre of apples. We can figure something out.
That would be great. I would love to make cider. Cider is such a great industry right now. It's another one where there's a ton of experimentation. Champagne yeast, different kinds of flavorings, different kinds of fermenting. It's so cool. I would love, for example, to do like a farmhouse cider. Open top fermenter, see what kind of wild yeast gets in there. That'd be so cool. Something
it sounds cool, but also
something very dry, like it's a faggy Spanish cider.
I mean,
it is a little gross. You can't do it under Sikorsky Airport. Definitely not. No jet fuel cider.
Can we just put a little plastic wrap over it or something? Or listen, this is how I get my superpowers. This is how we're gonna do it with a jet fuel. Was going to get in the cider that we're going to make together. And that's going to give you my superpowers. You figured it out. You're a genius.
Yes. I love that. We can call it like superpower cider. Something we have to come up with like a catchy, weird name.
Well, nobody else can have it though. Just nobody else can taste it. Nobody else can have it. Like once it gives me a superpower, we got to get rid of it and never do it again. But no,
otherwise,
you don't get them. Just
like
me.
X-Men.
No, yeah, like, well, yeah.
I'll make it and you can drink it, but only.
Perfect. I think you should. I think it'd be a great thing in the portfolio. I can just imagine coming down to Stratford, hanging out in the tasting room, having a bunch of beers on tap, plus you've got the cider that you make. I think it'd be fantastic. Even do like a pear cider would be delicious. I mean, there's so many things you can do.
Pear cider. Or like pumpkin or butternut or honey nut squash ciders. Oh, man, there's so many things you can do. It's amazing. The world is so free and open.
Man, it would be so fantastic. And so the one beer you've got out right now that people can get, it's your kind of like an Oktoberfest. You know, you've got so many different things going on in that. Talk about the flavor profile behind that.
Sure. So as I've mentioned, sorghum is really funky. So the whole idea is to hide the sorghum. And the way I do that is with our spice blend. And we use pink peppercorns, cardamom, vanilla beans, cacao nibs, just to name a few of the things that go into this beer, as well as two different types of hops. And we use a European style yeast. So we're really pushing the envelope spice wise. And that's usually the first thing people say about our beers. Wow, this is so spicy. And they don't mean it like hot. They mean it like savory. That is the second word that people usually use to describe our beer, is savory. And then the hops hit and it's like, this is also citrusy. And I know that doesn't sound like they necessarily complement each other, but those three things really form the body of the beer. As for mouthfeel, it's pretty full and round, but it's not heavy. That was the other thing that I didn't like about most sorghum ales that I tried. They sure tended to be kind of heavy on the palate and stick to the back of your throat a little bit. That's not a pleasant way to drink beer. So we wanted to make it relatively dry, a little sweet, something super addictive. So I think maybe you can testify to the addictive quality.
You want another. That's all it was. I wanted to keep drinking it, especially that night. It was just, you know, a little bit cool outside. It definitely was more of a fall type beer to me. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. You said something here that I want to ask you about, and I'm not saying it. That's my Donald Trump sniff. Did you see that? I'm not saying it to be a jackass or to call you out. I'm just saying because you said it, and I think it's interesting to talk about. You said we brew with sorghum, and then we try to cover it up. Now, is that because sorghum has that kind of stigmata with it? That, you know, people hear that and think it's bad, because that's completely the case. Because, you know, when they told me you're making your beer with sorghum, well, I knew it initially because that's what you make. You know, everyone makes gluten free beer with. Immediately in my head, I'm like, this beer is going to suck. But then I tasted it, and I was totally wrong. Is that why?
Yeah. So we are trying to cover the worst aspects of sorghum. That's probably what I should have said. Sorghum in and of itself doesn't have a terrible, terrible flavor. It's just that it's really funky. And so you're trying to hide that kind of weird bitterness, that very green quality that it has. When you taste sorghum, it's almost like vegetal tasting. But it's also strange because it's super sweet. So while we're trying to enhance kind of that kind of vegetal thing in our beer, we're trying to take away that bitter sweet thing that goes on in it too. So yeah, while we're trying to hide the sorghum, we're also trying to use it to our advantage. And of course, it is the easiest thing to use to brew. So there's that aspect too. If they ever come out with something that's better tasting, that's also gluten-free, if they ever come out with like oatmeal LME or something that's delicious and also optimized for brewing, that's what we'll use. We're just going to continue using the things that are most accessible.
Right.
I don't know if that answers.
That's interesting. No, it did. It's kind of one of those things. I think it just has that stigmata, but I think that I actually think the more people taste your beer, and I mean this to everyone listening, this will change your mind because it changed mine. I want to come to and put some on tap at my house because it's so good. I was wishing I had it, as a matter of fact, watching football on Sunday with my family. It would have been awesome. My kids love gluten-free beer.
Is a testament. If I've ever heard one. If you want to drink it while you're watching football, that's a good sign.
Yeah, well, I did. I kind of enjoyed that. Like, it's kind of my thing to sit around and drink beer and watch football, which I sound like every other dude on the planet. I'm looking here on the website and you have something called Wise Old Owl. Which one's this one? I didn't taste that, right?
No, you didn't taste that. That's the pumpkin. We do that every so often. I wasn't super pleased with how our pumpkin ale turned out last time. It wasn't as pumpkin pie spicy as I wanted it to be. And the reason actually is the sorghum. So when you put squash into sorghum, it tends to get more squashy than you want it to be, as opposed to more like pumpkin pie-y. So I'm working on it. We're going to get there one way or another. There's always room for improvement. And that's one of those.
Do you roast the squash first?
You can roast it first. It takes some time. The other thing is, I think that sometimes there's a misconception about what pumpkin actually tastes like. People think about pumpkin ales and they think, it's a vegetable. And I think sometimes when people, myself included, drink pumpkin beer, they're like, this is delicious. This tastes like nutmeg. This tastes like cinnamon and vanilla and sugar. When in reality, when you're making a pumpkin beer, sometimes it tastes more like a vegetable.
You're absolutely right.
But the Wise Old Owl is actually one of the first things I ever made. And I'm always tweaking it. That's why it's seasonal, because I feel like it's different every time I make it. Until I really nail it down, it's only going to be seasonal. But
now, any thought on bringing a brewer in with you to kind of work with you on this stuff?
Oh man, I would love that. If somebody wants to come work for me for just beer, that would be awesome. I can't really pay you, but I can give you my beer.
I'll come hang out and just make beers with you and figure out. I'll give you a chef's point of view. How about that?
Perfect. I mean, that's similar. And I
might be a bad
think
thing.
This is true, that brewers are actually secretly chefs. But
well, it works out great because most chefs are secretly alcoholics, so it works out great.
Perfect. One chef drink.
That's right. That's right.
I would love to
check it out, guys. You can check out more information. Absolutely. You guys can check out more information at churchowlbeer.com. So I'll have her tell you the name and why she came up with the name for the beer, because it's not nearly as cool as I thought it was going to be, but it's churchowlbeer.com. Make sure you check out the website there. You get a lot more information. Tell them where the name came from.
This will be
exciting story. Exciting story.
Ready? I was raised Catholic, church. My favorite animal is an owl. Owl. Church owl. Lame. But as my husband points out to me, the initials are COB, which is close of business, which is kind of cool. So that was accidental. Serendipity is great.
I just had another thought. I'm going to digress for a second, just back to the pumpkin beer. What about steak? Because pumpkin thing, especially this year, kind of really, I mean, people are kind of like over it. You know, the whole like pumpkin spice, all that shit, pumpkin beers. Like, I remember seeing the first pumpkin beer start to show up like in August. I'm like, what the fuck? Come on. You know, what about doing a whole different, doing a whole different route instead of having a pumpkin beer, doing like a, you know, this is our autumn beer or whatever cool name we could think of, you know, like fall beer with kind of some of those hints, but maybe doing the apple thing kind of with it, a little bit of pear, you know, thinking, I don't know, that might be kind of a cool way to look at it. I don't know, just something different as opposed to the pumpkin beer.
You know what I've thought of? This is exactly right. I've thought about doing a quince sculpin.
Okay.
How cool would that be? But
that
like
sounds pretty
kind
good.
Of that beginning of fall, end of summer kind of like sweet fruit beer, but making it not super sweet, making it really dry using some kind of really dry ale yeast and working with very aggressively bitter hops. I think that would be really cool and might be kind of a refreshing answer to this kind of humdrum pumpkin spice latte beer thing.
I just had a gentleman say on Facebook, what about cranberry? And then I want to take it the next step further and doing like a cranberry, instead of having a pumpkin ale, call it the cranberry Thanksgiving ale, and it kind of becomes a thing that comes out like a Beaujolais Nouveau comes out, you know, around Thanksgiving time, like the first taste of the Beaujolais. I think it's a great way to do it. Not really, I'm just running my mouth. Yeah, kind of. I mean, you don't want it to taste like Like, we don't want a beer that tastes like turkey gravy, or maybe we do. I don't know.
Maybe we do. I don't know. This is America.
That's right. I want my beer to be gluten-free, but taste like cranberries and turkey gravy.
I mean, look, if Dogfish Head Ale can come out with a strawberry lime tweezin ale that's gluten-free, I think, like, there might be some room for gravy beer.
Gravy beer. There we go. Gravy beer. I don't know. I'm going to stop you right there because that just sounds terrible. I think we're done talking about gravy beer. Kind of sounds horrendous.
You sure?
Yeah, I think we should move on from gravy beer. That's what I think for sure. You guys should definitely check out churchowlbeer.com. That's churchowlbeer.com. For more information and learning more about it. She's doing some great things. Taylor's killing it over there. How do they find you on social media?
We have a Facebook. We also have a woefully ill-updated Instagram and Twitter, Church Owl Beer on all of them. I update the Facebook
I tagged you on Instagram tonight, and you didn't even acknowledge it.
I did, too. I liked it.
Did you? I didn't see it. I don't know. I don't know. I was rushing home from Greenwich from work to make sure I could get here in time.
Never
anyway.
Instagram and drive, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
But, well, sometimes. Yes, it's just me. So I try and update them as often as possible with big news. But, yeah, that's how
good.
You can
I mean,
it
definitely
on social media.
Posting pictures of brewing process. People really like that stuff too, man. So it's been awesome talking to you. I want to play What Did We Learn Tonight on the show with you, if you got a few more minutes. You want to play?
Absolutely.
All right. So what did we learn? Very simple. I'm going to give three and Taylor's going to give three. Three things we learned tonight that we didn't know before the show started. Let me tell you something else. What Did We Learn is brought to you by Ergo Chef Knives. Ergo Chef Knives, my knife is smarter than yours. These knives are fantastic. I use them every single day. Make sure you check out ErgoChefKnives.com. And if you're looking for a great deal, use promo code PLUM15 off to get a great deal on some fantastic knives. I tell you what, I use them every single day, and they are fantastic. All right. I'll tell you what I learned. First of all, I learned that the word autumnal is a real word. I had no idea what that was. Like, you said that and I thought for sure like that was something that maybe people get removed off their feet or something like that. I wasn't sure.
It's a fake word.
That's right. So what's one thing you learned tonight?
Yep. I learned that you secretly crave superpowers that come from jet fuel. We can drink beer.
That's true. That's very I don't actually care where they come from. I just crave superpowers. That's all it is.
Clarification, Chef Plum wants superpowers.
That's right. I just want superpowers. I learned tonight that we should make a gluten-free gravy beer. And I'm going to add to that, we should call it Old Gravy Leg. That's what we'll call our gluten-free beer. We're gonna make.
You just stole me.
I mean, I see,
that was pretty
good. I see the marketing. Look, what the marketing term is, oh, I'm having an Old Gravy Leg tonight.
Oh, man. I learned that I could make that voice on live radio that I just made. Oh, man, Old Gravy Beer. Disgusting. Okay. Your turn. Voice. I'm going to step back from that.
Yeah, a little bit. I learned tonight that Taylor knows how to get to Mordor and can get the ring with Frodo. I did learn that tonight.
Yes, I can.
come on, give me one more.
Okay, I learned that you have 4 acres that you're willing to sublet to my cidery, and maybe we can plant some really weird apple blends on that situation.
So
get it going.
As long as it's GMO free, and I'm down. I'm totally down.
Yes, success. You just signed up for it, buddy.
There you go. Hey, maybe it should be a bacon and gravy beer.
Bacon, gravy, and cranberry. So that's like the morning after Thanksgiving, like the hangover drink.
I didn't know where you were going. I thought you might be talking about pushing somebody down the stairs, but I wasn't sure. I didn't know. I heard it was morning after. I got scared. That was inappropriate. I'm going to have to keep my Donald Trump sniffling going on. Hey, listen, you've been a lot of fun to talk to, Taylor. I wish you all the best. I look forward to the future and anything I can ever do to help. You know how to get in touch with me. And I look forward to coming over there and filling up one of my little 5-liter kegs.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. Thank you for having me. It's been so much fun.
You're awesome. I dig what you're doing, and I look forward to seeing what the future holds for you guys.
Yay. Thank you. Thank you. Right. I really appreciate it.
We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chef.
All right. We'll see you. See ya. There she goes, guys. That's Taylor from Church Owl Beer. You can check them out at churchowlbeer.com. They're doing some great stuff. Let's take let's go ahead and just close this show out, man. We don't need to freaking keep making anything crazy going on. So next week, you guys, New Belgium Brewing Company is the plan to be on this very program. That's the plan. They're going to come on. Whoa, that's loud. And tell us a little bit about how they do stuff. We're trying to do a whole little 3-episode series talking about beer, going from a small brewery like Church Owl Beer on to New Belgium. And then I hope to have someone from Anheuser-Busch on to go from that smaller medium range to incredibly large brewery. I hope to talk to these guys and see what they got going on. Make sure you check me out on Twitter, on Instagram, at chef_plum. And of course, if you check out the show via iTunes, please rate, review, and subscribe. It is very, very important for the algorithm to keep this show where it is. And again, I thank you guys so much for checking out the program. It means the world to me, and I love doing this on Monday nights. So I look forward to doing it again next Monday night. So, in the meantime and in between time, ladies and gentlemen, please remember food is one of the most important things that we have in life. Everything important in life happens around food. Let's make sure that we give it the time it deserves. And I'll see you guys next Monday night with New Belgium Brewing Company. Peace! See you next week. I came to play. There's a price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees.